All right. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Board of Directors meeting for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. Can we get a roll call, please?
Director Austin?
Here.
Director Lee?
Here.
Chair Ray Russell?
Here. And would you join me with the Pledge of Allegiance, for the Pledge of Allegiance, please? Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
For agenda review, is there any items that the board members would like to take out of order this evening?
No.
Okay, then we'll proceed as published and go to public comments for items not appearing on this agenda. This is the time for the public to come forward to speak to us for up to 3 minutes on items not on tonight's agenda. Would anyone like to come forward? Seeing no one, I'll close public comment and move us along to item 5. This is the consent agenda, approval of warrants, and approval of meeting minutes from February 5th, 2020. Any questions of staff?
No. I'd like to, you don't have it. Okay, I'll make a motion that we approve the consent agenda, items 5A and 5B.
I will second that.
We have a motion, a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And none opposed. Motion carries. Item 6, we have three item 6s today. Item 6A is consideration of fiscal year 2019-2020 second quarter budget adjustments and the possible adoption of resolution 2020-413 authorizing budget adjustments. That was a mouthful, Mr. Gent.
Yes. Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. So this evening, the subject's already been shared, the consideration of the fiscal year 19-20 second quarter budget adjustments. It's recommended that your board review the recommended budget adjustments and adopt resolution number 2020-413 authorizing the budget adjustments. This staff report provides staff's recommendations on the minor adjustments that need to be made here at quarter two. I will turn this over to Amy here in a minute so that she can go through it in more detail. But in general, the budget and finances remain adequate for district's operations. There are some adjustments that we need to make here at the mid-year. And as we go through this, you'll note that some of the inconsistencies that we're making adjustments for center around the redundancy project with, you know, as far as the loan funding coming in for the redundancy project. So we had anticipated on our revenue stream approximately $18 million in loans coming in during this fiscal year. And as you know, as the schedule has moved out for redundancy, none of that revenue is here yet. We're not borrowing the money until we're ready to go into construction. And so those big numbers commingled with our smaller annual budget numbers, when you're mixing $18 million in with a $6 million annual budget, weird things happen. And so Amy will talk about that a little bit, and you'll see that. In addition to that, we had a couple internal transfers that we needed in Fund 19. We had some permits, fees, and licenses that were higher than anticipated. One of those was the Regional Water Board, and then the other was a fine that, you know, we don't budget annually for fines, so we need to increase that account, which handles our permits, fees, licenses, and penalties. Right now, we're 126% expended at the end of the quarter. That sounds more than it is because it's I was just pausing because I didn't know if I lost you guys or...
You totally lost me.
Okay, so that's why I wanted to pause. So we are on page 3, 7, and 8.
Thank you. There's the 126. Okay.
So yes, this is one of the more noteworthy things. So the 126% expended, so a lot of our permits, they come up annually and they're one-time fees, and so those have all been expended. We also had a $6,000 violation that we paid earlier this year that was not budgeted for. So to make it to the end of fiscal, we will need to increase the budget in that account. And so We've got some other accounts exceeding 60% not requiring adjustment, and that's because we believe that there's adequate money in there. So we go through and we look, okay, what's outside of 50% for the year? We're at mid-year. Are we running over anywhere? So that we've got some here in this next section as we move into section 9 are some that we don't think need adjusted, even though they're outside the 60%, and those descriptions are provided there. Sorry, I'm rambling a little bit here. I got sideways. So the account, the liability auto insurance, that's a one-time. We're fine there. It's 94% expended. LAFCO budget share, it's 100% expended. We made an adjustment at the first quarter. The auditing, 101% expended. We don't expect any additional charges to the audits. Zone 1 and 1A, those numbers were just higher from the county. We budgeted, so it was a little bit higher than what we had budgeted, so we need a little bit, we're a little bit over budget there in that particular account. Ocean outfall maintenance, Mr. Jones conducted that activity in conjunction with the city of Pismo Beach because of the combined outfall. That work is complete, so that 85% number will be the year-end number on that particular item. Automotive maintenance, we had some major maintenance done to a couple vehicles. We don't anticipate any major increases throughout the rest of the year. So right now, we'll revisit that at the third quarter if something gets too high on that, but we believe there's adequate budget moving forward. And then office equipment, computer GIS. We did have some increases in that category because we bought most of our office equipment at the beginning of the fiscal year, and so that's why it's higher than the 50% that you would expect on a straight line projection through the fiscal year. And with that concludes my portion of the accounts, and I'll turn that over to Amy if she has anything to add, or if she doesn't, we can just take questions from the board.
I was going to explain the red number that can be seen on page 3.
You're going to want to pull that mic close to you so people at home can hear you. Okay. There you go.
Okay. I'm going to discuss the expenditures in Fund 20. Total district expenditures at the end of the second quarter stand at $1,441,712, or... Okay, I'm on page 2.
Thank you.
Of the report, expenditure adjustments.
Okay, we're not getting any mic on. Do you guys have?
There you go. She's got it.
Okay. So page 2 of the staff report, expenditure adjustments. Total district expenditures at the end of the second quarter stand at $1,441,712. In parentheses, I show what that would be if I took out Fund 20, because
you mean Fund 20 money, Fund 20,
or if I put in the Fund 20, yes. So, or 6%, 35%, excluding Fund 20. So, if I remove Fund 20 out, is what I mean.
So you're saying if you move $18 million out?
Correct. Well, so the whole line, $18,930,000 for the budget and the amount expended. The reason the amount expended is negative is because we spent redundancy designation money, which we transferred from 19 to Fund 20. So if you look at the budget to actuals, page 3.
Go slow.
Okay. Page 3, budget to actuals, and it's attachment number 3.
Oh, so not page 3. Where are we going?
Attachment number 3.
Table number 2.
Attachment page 3.
Page 3.
Profit and loss, budget versus actual. You'll see the expenses. So as you're looking across, you'll see the list of accounts. And then you'll see the July to December, which would be our actuals. Then you'll see what was actually budgeted. in the columns across. And then you'll see as you go down that for SCADA, we've spent $12,116.
SCADA is
20-7060. The first one under expenses. And so you'll see the 12 million there. And then you'll see, go down a little further to redundancy.
12,000, right?
$12,116.
Okay.
And then you go down a little further and you'll see for redundancy, we've spent $86,332. So our total expenditures in Fund 20 is $98,000. Now the problem with the tables that I'm showing you show that we're using redundancy designation money. So that was a transfer that came from Fund 19 into Fund 20.
Where are we seeing that?
You can see it on the consolidated budget, which would be attachment number 2.
This one.
Yes, the colorful one.
Right.
Yep. So almost to the bottom. Well, you see the negative red. So that money was when we wanted to make the balanced budget. We wanted to make sure that our expenses and our revenue were the same. We wanted to present you with the balanced budget. In order to do that, we were going to have $1,185,700,000 left over in expenses with money that wasn't part of redundancy. And so we created this account, redundancy designation.
Wait, go backwards. Say that last part again.
Okay, so to keep the balanced budget, when we figured out how many expenses we would have versus how much revenue we had, there was an extra $1,185,000 at the beginning of the budget when we first presented it to you. So what we did with that $1,185,000 that would be left over after all the expenses that they wanted to budget for, we created this account called redundancy designations because we knew we needed more money in Fund 20 for redundancy.
So at the beginning of the year, we were programming in $1.18 million in reserves.
Correct.
And those reserves were put into redundancy designations.
Correct. We knew we would have more income,
we'd have more revenue
than expense.
Okay.
And so
we
transfer it to Fund 20 immediately because we knew that we could use it there.
But if it's shown in brackets and in red, it's a negative.
Well, it's a negative in 20 because it's a transfer.
But it's still money going in.
But we
right?
account for it in Fund 19. We account for it coming into Fund 19.
So it comes into 19, and you do a transfer out to 20.
Correct.
And so from a accounting designation, it's a deduct out of 19, but an income into 20.
Correct. So we expense it out of 20.
So it's still a sum gain zero.
Yes. But in order to stay budgeted or to stay balanced, we subtract it from Fund 20. Because we did spend $98,000 in Fund 20, but there was still more money because of this designation left over.
This is impossible to track the way that this is coming forward. So instead of trying to figure this out, is it possible that we can continue this part of the discussion because we're still going to make the other line item adjustments, but I don't think we're going to get to an understanding looking at three different pages three different ways.
Okay, I can
tonight
bring the whole formula of how I came to it at the next meeting.
What I want isn't the formula. What I want is how is the public going to figure out what's going on here? If we can't get it visually from what's going on here, the public's not going to figure out what's going on there. And that to me is the issue.
Okay.
So how we show what money is coming in and that it's being, that's essentially reserve money because we're not spending it yet. I think it's pretty clear we're not showing it in a way that the public's going to be able to understand what's going on. Okay. So I'm not challenging the numbers.
Right.
I'm challenging how we're showing it to the public.
Okay. I will come back with a new way to show it.
Okay. I think that would be good.
And I agree. And I think my brain was thinking if it was initially funded in 19, it's already been moved to 20, and we've spent 98,000, right? So we have basically in Fund 20 right now, we have 1,185,700 minus 98,000.
Correct.
Okay. So, yeah, visually,
except for the money. If I'm a member of the public looking at that and I see a number in brackets, even if it wasn't red, that's showing that we've moved it.
We've moved it, but we haven't spent all of it. And so it shows as a negative number because we moved more than we spent. Because I've moved 50% of what was budgeted.
50%?
At 50% of the budget.
50% through the year. The transfer is happening quarterly, and so that transfer out of 19 has happened multiple. Is it quarterly or monthly that you're
quarterly,
Amy?
And we're at the mid-year, so it's 50% of
so,
the budget.
So it's we're absolutely struggling to explain this, and we need to come back with a clearer picture. And it is complicated. And Amy and I sat down with our CPA and went through this particular item to make sure that we were following, best government accounting practices, and worked with Carrie, our CPA, on this particular item. And so as an engineer, my accounting runs out relatively quickly, but I did understand it when I sat down with the CPA, but I'm not going to be able to explain it to the audience tonight. And so rather than continue to embarrass ourselves, we can table either section 12, or we can table the whole item and come bring this back in a month and make the adjustments then. It's up to your board's leisure.
I'm fine with, maybe we're going into commentary, but we've already done public. I'm okay with making the line item adjustments that we need to make. That's not going to change between then and now. The question is just reporting this in a way that the board can understand how this money's moving from one to the other, and then the public can understand what that money is and where it's moving from as well.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll come back with an update and an explanation and a presentation to your board that will elaborate and explain and either alter the way that we're presenting this, or we'll be able to explain it in a way that the way it's presented will make sense.
And it might. I don't know if redundancy designations tells us or the public what that means. We've changed those titles before. Maybe that can help.
Okay.
If we've got to try and go backwards to a profit and loss budget analysis to figure out what's going on here, I think that's where we all got lost, and we can't track any of that. So there may be a way. There's lots of room on this form. I love me my one pagers. You know that, right? But there's lots of room on the form where we might be able to show a little bit more information to make this just more understandable at first glance.
Sure.
So that was, I guess we'll call that questions of staff.
Okay.
Do we have more questions of staff besides that particular question?
I had one other question, and it has to do generally with fund 19 and the accounts exceeding 60% but not requiring adjustment. Several of those were under 100% and several were over 100%. Remind me, do we fund at the top level and then it buckets into where it's needed? Because obviously the auditing is at 101, zone 11A is at 103. That's just an internal balancing, correct? I mean, we don't need to move 3% from reserves into here, correct? Or do we just fund at the top level?
The audit's done at Fund 19, the roll-up of the schedule that you're seeing there. So that 103 washes out in that higher when it's rolled up.
Okay.
We're not over on the total in Fund 19.
Yeah, and I just wanted to make sure that I understood that, and that the fact is that, we're budgeting to the top line. The individual lines, you can move money around internally with the notification of this in the staff report, so as necessary. Okay. Thank you.
That confused me more. Because then why would we need to make any line item adjustments at all?
So when we would be looking to make line item adjustments would be as if we needed to move more money into that account, or we thought that it was of a magnitude that if we didn't do it, Fund 19 as a whole would go over budget. But with some of the savings, and so if we look at the ocean outfall maintenance, that was a $45,000 line item, I believe, and it's 85% expended, which leaves 15% of that $45,000 left over, and that's adequate to cover the 3% overrun or the 1% overrun on those smaller accounts. Yeah,
I see.
And so we could, you know, go through and make sure that if we go over by a couple dollars, we come in and do it as a line item budget adjustment for that account. But we can move inside of these Fund 19s, like 7069 and 772. Those accounts are inside one, and so we can move money between those accounts administratively.
And I'm okay with that. I mean, it's you're bringing it to our attention, but we've basically given staff the ability to move that money around as necessary, as Mr. Gent said, within the realm of what budgets or what balances the budget line items. Okay, thanks.
Questions?
All right, then let's go ahead and open this item up to public comment. Would anyone like to come forward on this?
Patricia Price. I would appreciate some clarity on that figure that was in red. I think I understood. I looked this over earlier, and I think I understood the switching from one category to another because we had more in one. We needed it in the other. That I had no problem with. But this, what we all were getting confused about, I also was confused. So as clear as you can make that, I would appreciate it because this stuff is hard for me to understand. I really, really have to study it. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right, then I'll close public comment, bring it back to us for comment, and...
So we're bringing this whole item back?
My vision would be to adopt the resolution and authorizing the budget adjustments so that we can move forward on that, but then have direct an item to come back that explains that, the bookkeeping part of it.
Okay, gotcha. That's good.
I agree with that as well. I did have one more question.
Turn your mic on.
Yeah, I agree with that approach. I did have one more question, and I was just doing a little bit of math. On table number 2, fund expenditures, on 6A, page 3, there's a negative $494,401. When you bring it back, can you explain how you got to that number as well?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Then perhaps someone would like to make a motion.
Okay, I'll make a motion that we approve resolution number 2020-413, a resolution of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District Board of Directors amending the FY 2019-20 budget at second quarter.
I will second that.
So we have a motion and a second. Can we get roll call, please?
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Lee?
Yes.
Director Ray Ressam?
Yes. And do you have enough direction to know what we want to have next time?
Absolutely.
Okay. Excellent.
Thank you.
Visuals. Okay. That moves us forward to item 6B. This is district goals and priorities.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. Before you this evening, I've got a short presentation that I'd like the board to receive a draft on the district's goals and priorities. I've been with the district now for about 18 months, and over that 18 months, I've been studying the operations and trying to assess where we could do better, where regulations are forcing us to move in a direction, and where we need to make operational improvements or need to adjust employee training opportunities. And so over the course of those 18 months, I've been capturing this and wanted to bring something back to your board so that you could see what my intent is for the district and vision for moving it forward and over the next 5 years. This is a draft. I'll open it up at the end for comments and discussion from you in case my vision doesn't match the board's vision, and we can make adjustments. And over the future meetings, we can finalize these goals. So just a quick introduction. This is really just a background of the district. So right now, the district's plant's located in southwest of Oceano, southwest of the Oceano County Airport, inside the community of Oceano. District includes the city of Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and the Oceano Community Services District. We maintain 9 miles of trunk main and treat wastewater for approximately 39,000 in population, and that's equivalent to 900 million gallons of wastewater each year. The purpose of the presentation is to describe the high-level goals and priorities that I've identified for the district, and I believe these are necessary to move these goals forward to complete improvements at the plant and the district. These are the large picture goals here, so I kind of broke them into five categories, and I'll elaborate on each of those five. But when I was initially looking at it, I was considering, okay, are there administrative goals, financial goals, operational goals, and what do they look like? And so as I wrote everything down that I had, I kind of was able to break it into these five goals. And then there's priorities inside of those goals that we have to work toward in order to reach these five. So one, increase infrastructure reliability. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. So obviously redundancy is increasing infrastructure reliability. Stable and responsible financial health. How do we come up with a plan moving forward that when we're not being reactive to cost needs, that we have a rate structure with built-in increases that allow us to incur cost increases going forward, and those type of things. Create a modern office. The facility has been in existence since 1966. Some of the infrastructure inside the office is dated. The phone lines are copper. When it rains, they get staticky. There's those type of things. And so I'll talk a little bit about things that I believe we need to do to create a modern office. Employee development. With some of the changes coming to the plant, we also have to pause and look at, okay, since we're making changes, do we have everything, the staff have all the competencies that they need to be able to operate the changes that we're making to the plant, and so to stay mindful of that. And then lastly, to something I always strive to do is to be a valued and respected community partner. The district serves three agencies. We collaborate with many other. We work with regulators and environmental groups to communicate through those. And so we want to be respected and valued for the work that we do here at the district. Just to show a little boundary of the area that we cover here, you can see that from Arroyo Grande up to the south end of the city of Pismo, and then south basically to Highway 1 in Oceano is the limits of the district. And that's where we collect, and those are all of our ratepayers inside that red boundary. Here's a little exhibit of the plant, an aerial photograph of the plant. And that's the airport there on the north that you can see, the runways, and then the AG Creek on the south side, and its levee that runs along there is the faint brown line that you see. So moving into the goals, the first goal I identified was to increase infrastructure reliability. And so we want to build, maintain, and operate a cost-effective and reliable wastewater treatment system for the district and its ratepayers. you know, one of the major components is obviously that we talk about regularly here is redundancy. And so since we're on the topic, redundancy right now, our secondary treatment process only has a single path through. And so because of that, if we had an equipment failure or needed to take something offline to do maintenance, we would be under-treating water at that point. So not having that redundant process, it compromises the district's ability to respond quickly and to protect the coast and the ratepayers from a spill. The next goal I identified was develop a more formal CIP program. Currently, the district uses a life expectancy analysis on the equipment, a capital replacement list, but we don't necessarily bring forward like a five-year capital improvement project plan to share with the board, which is a lot what most agencies and most utilities would do. We would formalize a capital improvement program that would have stuff in it, such as the clarifier that Michael's been working on over the past years, or upsizing the Grover main at the point where that has to be done by the district if they reach capacity of the line and it's no longer adequate. So those would be the type of capital projects that we would have in our CIP program. And really, we do that every year, and we do 1 year's worth every time we do the budget. And so this is really just the intention to say, hey, let's take a look at what our capital improvement program is going to be over the next 5 years, because that it really is important to be looking that far out ahead so that we know what we're doing as far as rates and that our rates are going to be adequate moving into the future. Because what we don't want to, and I'll save that because I'm going to talk about that in a minute. On the infrastructure reliability side, the third goal I found there, 1C, was continuing development of SCADA, which SCADA is our systems control and data acquisition software. And so basically that's a computer screen that Michael and the operators use that shows all the activities inside the plant. The district has made an initial investment in the software and the logic and necessary electrical components and communication components throughout the facility. And we need to continue to bring that on, bring more components into that system. Additionally to that, redundancy, everything is going to be controlled with SCADA. So we're going to inherit a big group of SCADA automated controlled equipment after redundancy. And so the goal is, while we're doing this, is to bring everything else online so that we have a fully automized facility once redundancy is completed. The fourth thing I identified on the infrastructure is develop routine inspection and cleaning program for trunk mains. And to a certain degree, that already exists. Michael and I have been working on formalizing that and developing it in a more systematic and annual basis, where we're cutting off or biting off smaller chunks on an annual basis rather than waiting several years to do a larger effort and to clean sections of our system more frequently than the longer duration. Because again, that ties back into the financial security to have a smooth running facility, that we're not waiting 10 years to clean our lines. We're cleaning a portion every year or every other year so that we're not seeing that big cost incurred to our budget on an infrequent basis. And that kind of moves right into the stable and responsible financial health. So we want to ensure that there are adequate fiscal resources to meet all the district needs. The first priority that I see is post-redundancy to review adequacy of rates. So obviously with redundancy, construction cost of $21 million, total project cost of $30 million. As we move through that, when we get the bid, we'll have a good snapshot of what the costs are actually going to be, but it won't be until we actually have built everything And if you know, if we incur change orders, there could be cost and cost overruns on the project. And there will, at the end of redundancy, the district will have to pause and take a look at our financial health and say, okay, do we need to raise rates next year, or do we need to raise rates 5 years from now, and do an actual formal rate analysis because of the magnitude of the project that we're moving forward. So the second thing that I identified on the stable component is regular and stable inflationary increases. That's a best practice. I believe some of our member agencies for their own cities have moved in that direction with a more stable and inflationary type increases on 218. And I'll talk a little bit about why that's important. With a facility like this, there can be the temptation to squeeze maintenance and not increase rates and defer maintenance. And that happens sometimes under political pressure or the unwillingness to have that difficult conversation of if and when rates need to be raised. But what that does is that's really just kicking the can down the road, and you have to deliver worse news in the future than you would have if you just said, oh, it's going to be a couple percent every year. And one of the good models is you build in an inflationary factor, and then at 5 years you pause and look, okay, are we over collecting or under collecting, and make the adjustment on a 5 year interval. And so that's a concept that I think has a lot of merit, and something that I think the district should consider moving forward as we move out of redundancy and go through that process of studying the adequacy of the district's rates. Again, this beneficial reuse of digester gas, this could kind of go in the operational side as well, but I really see it as a financial issue. So right now the district generates methane gas, through our digesters. So the organic material at our plant is digested similar to like inside of a human stomach, and that gas, it produces methane gas, and currently we burn it all. It's just flared off. There's opportunities that exist that we could either generate power or at least heat. We have to heat our digesters as well. So we're burning this flare, paying for natural gas and paying PG&E for electricity, and we could offset the majority of those costs. The issue is it's a substantial investment of upfront capital. Some programs with PG&E we're investigating. And so we're studying that right now. And we'll be bringing back the initial study here yet this fiscal year with MKN's working on a feasibility study. And we'd like to consider, we don't know what the outcome's going to be, but something, we need to make a decision on what we want to do. Do we want to take advantage of that gas? I think the economics will kind of lead us to say, yes, we want to take advantage of that and invest in what would be called a cogeneration system. Basically, we would plumb that gas into a generator and generate the majority of the power needs at the facility today. 2D is develop a district master plan. And this is tied somewhat to the coastal development permit for redundancy. So as we've talked about a couple times, the idea of sea level rise and a potential retreat strategy for the plant was identified in obtaining the coastal development permit. And so by 2047... we have to have a nailed down plan on how we would relocate the plant. And there's check-ins at 2027. They want to see us making progress towards that plan to relocate the facility. And then again in 2037. So we got our permit in 2017, and so everything's 10 years after that. So 2027, we have to make our first submittal to them, say, hey, we're actually looking at this. We're looking at the feasibility of what it, If sea level becomes too much of an impact to the facility, what would be our strategy for retreat? Or I don't want to just say retreat. Retreat's the most obvious, but it does not completely rule out the armor in place, but it falls out pretty quickly. I just wanted to include that in case that consideration comes up in the future, that the site could just be protected where it is currently, because that's not entirely off the table. So with that, I didn't really talk about the time frames. I've kind of just laid out time frames on when I see these needing to be implemented, or the bulk of the work effort for those categories. If we move to goal three, to create a modern office, talking with staff, and you know, kind of what the needs are at the facility. We've got a container on site, two containers on site, full of district files right now, and so there was the intent a number of years ago to digitize those. I think that with some of the transitions that had been dropped, and so this is what we're talking about, picking that back up again. You know, the electronic office going to scan documents, not using paper. Come in here with iPad, and then all of our filing would be scanned and digitized, and all of our old files would be scanned and digitized and secured on the cloud as well as on internal servers at the district. Updating the district phone system. I don't know. I know I had this conversation earlier. I don't know if I said this already, but building's been in place since 1966. Copper phone lines. When it rains, there's static on the phone lines. Our voicemail system doesn't work, and so this is something I don't even know that it belongs on here, because it's just something that I need to get done and move on with. But since it was create a modern office, and this is something that I'll definitely be tackling is the phone system, I included it. Overhaul to the district website. This is more just over the course of 10 years, do you do a rehab of a website? I tend to work in the mindset of if it's not broke, don't fix it. But I do think there's features that could be added to the website and some cleanup that could be done. And so I think that's something that we would want to take on just to keep up with it and, it's our introduction. It's our business card to the world, really. So, making sure that when people come looking for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, when they're greeted, they have a good experience. One of the things that comes up in conferences is threat of cyber attacks to specifically water and wastewater facilities. There has been the intelligence agencies have identified that there has been a dedicated effort to be disruptive to the water supply by hackers, and that's a risk that they've identified. And so there's little workshops and seminars about staying up to date and making sure that you're doing best practices. We're a small district, and making sure that we have all of the necessary firewall and security in place that would prevent anybody from being able to somehow hack into the district and alter the treatment process, for instance, is the biggest threat. That's what these conferences talk about. To date, we haven't experienced anything along those lines. I don't mean to be alarmist, but this is more of an evaluation. Do we have everything that we need, and what are we doing to keep up with cybersecurity? Goal four, employee development. So we've got a new process coming to the plant with redundancy. We've got an activated sludge process. That's not currently something that our operators have a lot of experience with. It's a different type of biology that you're using to treat the wastewater. And so we've reached out to the city of Paso Robles, which recently did build aeration basins and an activated sludge process with a new major upgrade that they did, I think, in 2014. And they've graciously offered to allow our operators to go up there and shadow their operators and get a feel for operating aeration basins so that when we take over, and we'll, the contractor will provide training, we will hire a consultant to provide some operational oversight when we first take it, but all of that goes together to make sure that our operators feel competent and in their ability to take on that new role. This is a lot of new infrastructure that they'll be introduced to, and you know, we want them to be happy to take it on. And so we'll be rotating some of the staff through the City of Paso Robles facility so that they can understand the nuances of operating activated sludge. Goal five, be a valued and respected community partner. Right now, the elephant on that is the Central Coast Blue Project. You know, it's a big project for the region. It has there's a lot of agencies that have a need for it. And so to the extent that the district can be a partner and support that effort, we want to do that for our member agencies and for the region, just out of being good stewards of the water that we handle. And if there's a benefit, if somebody can reuse that to the benefit of the public, then we want to try to work toward making that happen. Right now, the way it's structured is our effort will really tend to be if and when the second phase of Central Coast Blue comes to fruition, if the existing phase one project is not adequate water, then you know they could the group could be looking for contributions from the district's water supply back through the advanced treatment facility to inject into the groundwater, and so we want to assist and be technical experts to help advance the project and offer our experience and thoughts on moving the project forward. And with that, I'll open it up for discussion for the board, and I'm happy to take notes to modify anything that I missed.
Thank you very much. Do we have questions?
Just some comments. I don't really have any questions.
Okay. Questions?
I'm more comments than questions.
Same here. So let's go ahead and open it up to the public and see if anyone would like to come forward and ask a question or make a comment on this item.
Patricia Price again. I was wondering, has the district put any money towards Central Coast Blue? And if so, what was it for? Are we expected to put more money in?
Okay. Thank you. And since there's no more public and nobody running in from the street, I'll close public comment. And why don't we answer that question if we can?
So yes, the district has currently put in some of its money in earnest toward the project, and some of the money that we paid in penalty to the Regional Water Board was allowed to be transferred to the project as well with the permission of the Regional Water Board. So there's, and then there's money toward the environmental document that Mr. Hubner in 2015 had worked with the City of Pismo Beach to advance the environmental document. And so that effort that just went public last month with the draft, that was half funded by the sanitation district. We have not budgeted additional funds for any Central Coast Blue efforts since that time. And there's not a real obvious connection to show that in phase one that there would be further district contributions. With that being said, the whole governance and how it's going to work is still somewhat in flux right now. And so as that gets discussed, we're still at the table and a willing partner to consider some of those. So if there's identified benefits to the district that the project can bring, then it might make sense to participate in those identified benefits. And so we would to come to the board and talk to you and say, hey, we think this makes sense. We would like to contribute, or participate in this portion of the project. And so a hypothetical would be if they say, well, this line coming in to the plant, if we went to phase two, like right now it only needs to be a 12-inch line, but for phase two it's going to need to be an 18-inch line. And so would the district be interested in paying the cost difference between a 12-inch piece of pipe and an 18-inch piece of pipe? And so that would be what I would consider an opportunity for us to take advantage of work that's already happening and future-proof and give an opportunity for us to participate in the project and have capacity in the future that we could move our flows onto that. So to answer the question directly, yes, we've spent money on it. We've spent penalty money on it, and we may spend money in the future, but nothing is budgeted right now.
The number that's in my head was $130,000. Is that right?
Correct. That for the EIR was $130,000, and I think it was $221,000 in penalty money that was spent on the project
that
as
we
well.
Would have had to pay in penalties anyway.
It was leaving the district. It's right. Not. It's only a talking point to the group because they don't really know how to account for it. Because they're saying, "Whose is it?" Right? Because everybody's tracking who spent what. And the last concept I introduced is consider it grant money because it seems most similar to grant money. It seems inappropriate for the district to take credit for the penalty, but that was my suggestion. I don't know where that stands right now, but it is a lot like a grant to the project because it came through the Regional Water Board.
So I think, Patricia, to answer your question, I think the number is 130 in terms of budgeted money from us with no future money budgeted. Does that – okay. Sounds good. Okay, so that takes us back to comments. Would you like to go first?
I'd be happy to go first. Thank you. And, Jeremy, thank you for putting this together. A good presentation, well thought out, and kind of gives a nice roadmap of where I think the district can go and hopefully will go. So some of my questions are more probably high level. Starting in Madam Chair, I don't know if you want to go goal by goal or –
Whatever, why don't you do your set?
Okay, then I'll start with goal number one. In the develop of the CIP program, just want to make sure that we include facilities maintenance in there, or would you consider facilities maintenance included in the CIP program itself? I mean, I know as vertical construction versus horizontal construction, there's two different sets of skill sets, and sometimes deferred maintenance is different than a capital project. So I just want to make sure that we capture that in there as well, because at some point with a modern office in item number two or number three, we're going to need a new office or a new roof or new walls or something of that nature.
New phones.
Yeah, new phones.
Yeah, so I'll say that is included, and we do budget that way right now for anything vertical that we need is on that annual basis that I described. So that information does work its way in, and so it would work its way into the five-year CIP, but point very well noted from the county's facility manager.
It's in my brain. So going to goal number two, under the beneficial reuse of digester gas, at Grover Beach we had Tim Mahoney from SoCal Gas join us a couple meetings ago, and actually he literally talked about the beneficial use of recycled natural gas or taking it from wastewater systems or landfills or so forth and capturing that. And so I had an offline conversation with him and suggested that he reach out to you. So not sure if he's had an opportunity to do that, but that is a program I think that SoCal Gas is trying to expand in their wastewater in their wastewater program. So if you wanted to, if you would add SoCal Gas to your...
What was the gentleman's name again, Jeff?
Tim Mahoney.
Okay.
He's the governmental relations coordinator, right?
Correct.
I don't remember what the district number is, but he goes clear down to like the entire 805 and all over the place.
Yeah.
So it's
okay.
Pretty easy to find, though. He's a...
Yeah. I may have his phone number. I can share that with you if I do afterwards. Let's see, then creating a modern office, I think that was good there. Going to... number five, under the Central Coast Blue, or the valued and respected community partner, agree with the...
You're not going to object to being a respectable partner.
No, actually, I'm...
okay.
And under Centricals Blue, definitely included in there. Wanted to add potentially a 5B for consideration, and maybe the district already does this, but on another meeting, I had an opportunity to meet with Andy Stinson, the Lucia Marr School District Superintendent, and we got into the conversation of mutual aid between agencies. In the instance where, let's say, there's something that occurs at the district level that is not affecting any of the cities or OCSD. For instance, trees go down and you've got a blockage to access the plant, but there's no other trees down and you need 14 guys to take these trees down, but you only have five. Do you have a mutual aid agreement between the district and Grover, or do you typically call up Grover's maintenance staff or AG's maintenance staff and just to kind of have that in place to say, if you need it and we don't have crews otherwise occupied, we can share resources and the district agrees to pay it at this level and vice versa. So anything like that in place?
So I do not know if the district is a formal signatory to the county's mutual aid agreement that the county does in conjunction with, I think it's LA County Public Works is the larger agency that organizes the mutual aid throughout Southern California. So that's something that I'd have to look into. What I can say is I have met with Steve Lieberman on these type of topics with Five Cities Fire. And because he was in, you know, had similar concerns and was talking about, you know, during certain types of events, letting us know that often they have resources available in those emergencies where we might be experiencing emergency, like during a lot of rain, there's probably not a fire. So, you know, there's some opportunity there we also coordinated for
Power Safety Public Shutoff.
And so that was a coordinated. So it's similar, like as far as, you know, what's the plan when we encounter these things and how do we pull resources? And so Andy Stinson, who I do believe just resigned.
Effective the end of June. So he's
okay. He's finishing out the year.
And he's moving to facilities.
So Lucia Marr, you know, they. When we were talking about what are we going to do for fuel supply, and so that was they have fuel because of the buses. And so that was one of the things. So we are thinking like that. But, yes, I'll add that as a goal to be a participatory player in the mutual aid.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for this report. I'll just start from the back, I think. And the training, I think, is excellent. Any kind of training we can get for them on anything, I think that's really helpful. And on the updates for the modern office, the phone system, is that something you're going to be doing soon?
Yes.
Okay. And that and the, I think, the electronic office is very important, too, to get that.
Okay.
Get rid of that container and those files. Do you have a cost of? Do you know what it's going to?
On the scanning side, no. The phone system, it's going to be about $9,000 for the phone system, but
to scan all the old files.
I've been told that we had a price at one point. It predated me that somebody had got a price before on what that would be.
And if I could add, the district wouldn't need to scan in every single document from the 1960s. Records retention laws do not require useless old documents to be retained, so that could save some costs.
Well, I think it's a great idea to get everything scanned. And the
not everything.
No, because we would. That's what I was worried about, the expense. If you had to do everything from the 60s, it would be, I don't know how many boxes are out there, probably a lot.
Yeah.
So... the website, great. The evaluate threat of cyber attack, I think, is a great idea. The reuse of the digester gas, the cogeneration, I think, is excellent. Something to really pursue.
Okay.
What Jeff was saying. And of course, deferred maintenance, I think, is a very important cost saving. the 2B, I think, was that, or do, is that where that was? I wrote the note there, deferred maintenance.
Yeah, so I was talking about avoiding, deferring maintenance to...
That was on item 1B.
1B, okay, I wrote it on the wrong page. Anyway, the deferred maintenance, I think, is really a necessary item to not have the big, large expenses. And, of course, the redundancy program.
Sure.
Great, and preventative maintenance, that's what I think I had here. That's another really good thing. So I think you did an excellent job of the goals. I think they're all... good.
Thanks, Linda.
Thank you.
So I will share with all y'all what I said to the director at the beginning, that the district administrator, that is, that I thought this was such an effective plan that I was concerned that it was going to be a transition plan for him. And I went straight to him and said, "You're not leaving us, are you? Because it just seemed so complete." It's kind of like legacy planning, or what do you call that? For institutional knowledge. Anyway, so I'll add a couple things that my colleagues didn't add. Yes.
Did he give you a response?
He did. He consistently said what he had said before, which is he wanted to see redundancy through. So with the 2C, the digester gas, don't we have existing equipment that there's an issue with that? Like, how does that figure into what you've written here? Because I didn't see it kind of written into this issue.
Yeah, so happy to elaborate. And I did update the board a little bit when we talked about, just in my administrator's report, when we kicked off the small contract with MKN to take a look at what would need to be done. So approximately in 2007, the district made an initial investment in a cogeneration system. And immediately when that system came online, the engine failed. And this was an issue throughout the United States, throughout the world, really, with cogeneration systems. So the gas that comes off digesters is fairly dirty, has a lot of moisture in it, and it also contains something else that's detrimental to engines called siloxanes. And it's basically, for the layperson, it's glass. So when you introduce these fine particles into the combustion chamber of an internal combustion engine and you have that heat applied to these siloxanes,
it up.
Yeah, glass builds up on the cylinders and the valves, and then it starts breaking off, and causes engine failure. So that's what happened at the district. So the district had siloxane issues. The internal combustion engine failed. That motor was rebuilt and sits there today. So the engine has been brought back to running a condition approximately 10 years ago. It's dated at this point. It's just sat there. So one of the things that MKN is looking at is, can we turn it on? Like, is that an option? But the one thing we do know is that we cannot turn it on without increasing the gas conditioning. A study was done back then with the failure. And so there's, we'll just call them filters. There's basically these filter tanks that the gas has to pass through. Some of it's activated charcoal, and there's another media that's called an iron sponge that takes out different constituents out of this gas. Ours are substantially undersized to the extent that our gas conditioning's roughly the size of that podium. And when I visited the city of Paso Robles gas conditioning system, it's probably 10 feet in diameter and 30 feet tall. Mm. So you can just off of the scale. Now, not everything's equal, but there's substantial difference in the size of that gas conditioning. So at a minimum, I think this study is going to say we have to improve the gas conditioning thing.
So in other words, this is going to account for that.
Correct. So we'll either, fix the conditioning and turn the motor back on or replace the we are talking with Pacific Gas and Electric, PG&E, similar to they have a program to reduce upfront capital for these type of projects so that we could just start realizing the cost savings because the economics are so good. They'll front that. And so we're looking, that's part of the study as well. They'll be assessing PG&E's program, and I'll introduce this Southern California gas concept as well.
Okay, sounds good. I also don't see anything in here about employee retention or that kind of thing, because it costs the district a lot of money when we have to get a new employee. We've got to train them. We've got to I'm just thinking in terms of long-term care of staff. We've got an item about being a good community partner, but not about being a conscious employer. And I don't know if that's a thing. If that's a thing, I have no idea what I'm talking about. But you know what I'm saying? Something that speaks to our contracts we have that we do every few years, and trying to make sure that we care for our employees in a way that allows them to stay for as long as they want to stay, etc. I think that's just part of being a good employer.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure where it would go, maybe on that last one, along with the Central Coast Blue about being a valued and respected community partner and employer. There you go.
Yeah, I think it could be four or five, with four is the employee development.
Right.
So yeah, we'll get it in there.
I just think that would be an important piece of what we stand for as a company and as an employer.
Sure, we should memorialize that.
Okay. And in each one of these sections, A, B, C, D, etc., are these in a particular prioritized order? Because I couldn't, they aren't in date order. So I don't know if these are just in order as they came out of the administrator's head, or if they're prioritized, and if they are prioritized, perhaps we need to have that conversation.
No, they're not in a priority. I did present them in a way that in each one of the goals that I felt like they didn't interfere with each other, that I wasn't talking about the previous one as I was introducing the next one. But no, they're not in chronological or like when we expect it or importance, but they're really just laid out that I didn't want to introduce a concept if one behind it helped support it. So they're kind of laid out that as I was able to present them to you, that you, when I got to item D, I didn't have to say everything because you heard A, B, and C, that there was.
Oh, I see. Okay, got it.
For flow, I guess.
And then, as we talked before the meeting today, for goal 5 about being a valued and respected community partner, perhaps we've already got a 5B, which is either some sort of formal or informal statements about mutual aid, but about the having the discussion about standardizing billing procedures across all the communities. And you had a great answer for me. I don't know if tonight's the night to have that conversation, but we've directed that we want that to be coming forward anyway. But maybe that goes in here as well.
Yeah, I initially did have that in here and pulled it out because of we're kind of in the middle of it, but don't really have any formal answers to give to the public at the moment. So, but would you like me to?
Sure. Why don't you share what you shared with me, and that way everybody's on the same page.
So previously, the board had asked me to go out and meet with the other city managers and come back with a report on whether it made sense to be consistent with our billing and potentially even go back to having Oceano do the billing. Shortly after Mr. Clemens joined Oceano Community Services District, I met with him on that topic. And Will was astute enough to point out that he had some concerns about if we went backwards at this point. He doesn't want the billing. I'll start with that. He does not want to take back over the billing for the district, and it's not anything that's adverse with the district. He is concerned about the impact to renters in the community and his disadvantaged community. So what has transpired now, when you move to the tax rolls, the property owners end up seeing that fee first. And so they may have already raised rents to account for having to pay for the sewer bills, which would typically be on the water bills. And, you know, the responsibility, it's common practice that that's the responsibility of the renter. So he's a big fan of using the tax rolls for sewer collection. Anyway, he worked on, he set it up for the Los Osos. It was adamant that it needed to be on the tax rolls. And so when I left that meeting, I reached out to the city manager of Grover and the city manager of AG to introduce that discussion of, okay, what would it look like to move everybody to the tax rolls? What kind of problems would that cause for your agency, if any? And so that's where the discussion stands right now. Is the next step is to sit down and have that discussion with Mr. Bronson and Mr. Bergman, and make sure that we know all of the consequences, both intended and unintended, of making a switch. And so I don't have like anything formal on what we're going to do now, because there's other players involved, but that's the status of that effort right now. I do believe moving to the tax rolls would be an advantage to the district. It would be a cost savings to the district, and we would be able to capture delinquent fees in a superior manner than we currently do by using the billing system, because the way the county guarantees the revenue. So if whether somebody pays their taxes or not, when the county sends us the money, it's the full amount. And so they go after the and so we're not involved in any type of collections in that scenario. So because of those efficiencies, it does seem advantageous for the district to consider moving all three member agencies to the tax rolls.
Didn't you say that, for example, in Arroyo Grande, if there is a vacant property, there's nothing being charged there, but the sand district has the right to charge the sewer fee as an active fee. Therefore, if we use the tax rolls, that fee comes back to the district, and if we don't use the tax rolls, then the cities aren't collecting it, therefore it doesn't go to us here.
Correct. On rates and charges for sewer in the health and safety code, if you have a flat fee, a flat monthly fee, no volume involved, which is our situation, we don't charge by volume for our treatment. You cannot pass through volume charges for an unoccupied property, but you can pass through flat fees to an unoccupied property. So in this example, we would, you can imagine there's properties that are vacant in between renters, and they may sit, or a vacation home that they may have the water shut off and it sits vacant for a couple of months. Under the current system, that 2 months, the district does not receive any revenue from that property. It's not significant in the big picture, but there's real things we could do with the amount of money that we're likely losing from the unoccupied category. So that would be another increase that those charges would be still being collected on a vacant property during that duration. Not a driver in the consideration of moving that direction, but is certainly in the pro category on the budget side of a win for the district.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Vacant property, you're talking about like a house that's for rent. How do you keep track of that? Would that be a lot of extra work to, if a house is vacant for 2 months?
So that's precisely, so when it's on the tax rolls, they're just being charged twice a year for all the months. So we don't do anything with we don't know whether it's occupied or not. But right now, and since it's coming on the water bill, if they shut off the water service, they no longer are billed for water and sewer. And so that's where we're not capturing that. So in Oceano, we get that money. But the other two member agencies were not. There's some losses there because of that situation.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Well, I'm still kind of finishing up mine, so that was my question there. I didn't see any kind of statements, which these are more like visioning statements or goal statements or something, but in terms of keeping things within a balanced budget. I know that sounds silly, but that is definitely a goal, is keeping our projects within budget, keeping our budget process on track. I say that because when I first came on to this group, just over a year ago, and you might remember that it was my horror that we didn't do mid-year budget adjustments, which I thought was just a standard thing everybody does. Well, I thought everybody also did, you know, the budgeting in that way too. So I just thought some sort of that's a goal in here somewhere, is making sure that we deliver those things and in a certain time period and for the public and whatever that looks like, however you want to massage that. But I feel like that's something that we want to say. But that's it.
So we had, when Gerber Beach has done its goal setting in past years, we struggled with that very topic. And it was, we settled, I don't know if settled is the right term, but we saw the budgetary fiduciary responsibility as kind of an overarching goal of the organization. And so rather than actually put it into the goals, we actually put it kind of at the top line header of almost the introduction. And almost of a vision. So I don't know if there's an appropriate place that it wants to be in this document, but definitely agree that it needs to be identified.
Sounds good. Whatever you think is appropriate.
So what may be appropriate, and something it sometimes can seem a little bit academic, but actually going through the process and setting a mission, vision, and values for the organization, there's nothing readily available at the district right now. I can't imagine that there's nothing that's ever existed, but
I would rather stick a hot fork in my eye than go through that process.
Okay. Okay. So it does seem academic. Okay, that's where I was.
I'll second that motion.
I'll make you feel better then. Thank you for being so kind as to introduce that without twitching.
Okay.
But it causes me convulsions, so. Okay. Then this is just going to be the sort of a receive and file, right? So this is a discuss, and do you feel like you have the direction that you need to kind of make this an adoptable document?
Yes.
Excellent. So then that will take us forward then to item 6C. This is District Administrator and Plant Operations Report. Who's going first?
Go ahead and start.
All right, excellent. Hi, Michael.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. Michael Jones, Plant Superintendent, and I'm presenting the Plant Operations Report portion of the District Administrators and Plant Operations Report. During this reporting period, February 1st and February 28th, the district's facility exceeded its NPDES permit limit for total chlorine residual. On February 25th, 2020, immediately following the observation, operation staff began pumping additional sodium bisulfite from the backup system to lower the effluent chlorine residual. In addition, operation staff continued running total chlorine residual analysis to ensure dechlorination was occurring. The cause of the exceedance was due to pump output signal settings being incorrect. The output signals were corrected immediately, and total chlorine residual has returned to within NPDES permit limitations. The Regional Water Quality Board, Water Quality Control Board, has been notified, and the district may be assessed a fine. All other process values were within permit limits. And in addition, staff recently installed a larger bisulfite pump. And that should assist with keeping up essentially what happened, the output signal. If you can figure, it's normally a 4 to 20 milliamp signal, so that's your 0 to 100% output to your pump. And based on that signal, at 4 milliamps, that's 0%, and at 20 milliamps, that's 100%. When we reinstalled our existing pump, that's a 0 to 20 signal, so at 0, it's 0%, at 20, it's 100%. That output signal is still at 4, So overnight, we're still pumping chlorine during our low flows. So that caused, in the morning time, when we get that initial influx and flows in the morning, we sent basically a slug of chlorine, and our existing bisulfite pump couldn't basically dechlorinate that initial slug of chlorine. So with this new pump, it's a much bigger pump, so it should be able to mitigate any kind of slug that would occur, and that shouldn't happen again.
Can I ask you a quick question on that before you go forward?
Yes.
So it says that it was pump output signal settings were incorrect. Is that just human error?
So we installed a demo pump. The demo pump was a 4 to 20 milliamp signal, and that pump had failed on us. And so we reinstalled our existing pump, and we forgot that in our SCADA system that we had switched our settings to 4 to 20.
Oh, okay.
So that signal should have been switched to 0 to 20.
What kind of fine might we be looking
at? Well, if we don't continue to violate, which I'm hoping for, we shouldn't be assessed the fine.
Okay.
The way the mandatory minimum penalty is you get basically 180 days, and if you don't have three violations within that 180 days, we shouldn't be assessed the fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Moving on to our monthly plant data. Again, all of our numbers are well within permit limits beside our chlorine residual. Our average BOD, our influent BOD is 470, average effluent 17.9. We have an average removal of 96.2%, which we're only required to meet 80%. Our influent TSS was 482. And our effluent TSS was 23.3 with a 94.2% removal. Again, that's we have an 80% requirement for that on our removal. Our chlorine usage, again, with the optimization of our system, a lot of that chlorine usage was because of that change. And then continuing to optimize we had a major usage because we didn't figure out that changed till the following day when we came in into the morning. Just continuing on to operations and maintenance projects. We troubleshot our boiler failure and replaced faulty variable frequency drive. We installed a small temporary spring on our Amiod solenoid to assist with operation. Toma Electric troubleshot our secondary clarifier sump, repaired a faulty panel control switch, and found faulty float switches. We're actually on that note. We're scheduling a confined space to repair those float switches. Right now, just our top float operates right now, so both pumps come on. But those will be repaired next week. We replaced the spring on our secondary clarifier scraper rinse valve. BC pump assisted with installation of our number three influent pump. AutoSys Incorporated created a proportional integral derivative. It's basically just a control loop switch to control the disinfection system overnight. They adjusted the influent wet well level settings, installed control wires on demo chlorine pump, and then installed new boiler nexus controller. And operations staff installed inlet piping on our demo chlorine pump, continued monitoring and optimizing our disinfection control settings. We tightened control wires on the demo chlorine control pump due to communication error. Replaced membrane caps and calibrated backup chlorine and sodium bisulfite systems. We repaired our reclaimed water line leak in our heating and mixing building. PC Mechanical performed an alignment on our influent pump number three. We cleared a blockage in our centrifuge auger and replaced fuses for the centrifuge auger control power. Performed maintenance on our portable generator. We removed a multitude of scrap metal and recycling from the plant. West Coast Gauging Services performed the annual maintenance on our flare, methane gas equipment, and installed new vacuum pressure relief valves and venturis on our flare. We reconnected our existing chlorine pump due to a failure of our demo chlorination pump motored. Reinstalled our sludge pump belt due to slipping off, and replaced tubing and troubleshot maintenance error on backup chlorine pump. Some work orders that staff completed: inspected digester vacuum pressure relief valves, thoroughly rinsed all surfaces of clarifiers, deragged primary sludge pumps, checked all sump pumps throughout our plant, and changed out all desiccators in electrical control panels. Some training that operations staff participated in. Operations staff participated in training on the forklift and participated in training on the operation of the emergency bypass pump and emergency generator. And then staff participated in level one operator training and certification for our new front loader. And then we did have one call out, which occurred on February 25th at 4:28 a.m. We had a high inlet chlorine oxygen reduction potential, high inlet chlorine residual, essentially. Our chlorine inlet was real high.
Is that the same violation that you talked about before?
So, no. This was the following night. So, I believe this was the 26th. This should be the 26th. And as part of that violation, we installed a new alarm that would inform the operators that if we had a high inlet residual, it allows operation staff to respond in time to mitigate that slug that essentially would come through. So we'll come in, we turn on our backup bisulfite pump and just start pumping additional bisulfite just to be safe. And so what happened is our operations staff responded. We lowered our settings so that would bring down our chlorine residual, our inlet chlorine residual, and then help mitigate that initial slug that comes in the morning. And with that ends my plant operations report, and I can answer any questions.
Any questions?
No, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gent.
Yes, a couple brief updates on some of the projects going on around the plant. So on the redundancy project, contractor pre-qualification efforts have resulted in substantial interest. This says 8. There are now 9 plan holders as of today. The RFQ closes on March 17th. Final questions. We only received one question. It was clarification on the scoring metric, and so the addenda was issued today by MKN, and so we expect to have all those in on the proposals on March 17th, and we'll be ranking those shortly to get a contractor qualification list for the redundancy project. We had a field review on site on March 2nd with myself, the project manager, M&S, the construction manager, Earth Systems, the geotechnical engineer, and the design engineers were via telephone. We met at the district and had our first project meeting as a full team for redundancy. And we're going over a risk register where we're looking at, okay, what's moving the project forward, what's at risk during construction, what could result in a change order, what things might need to be changed. And so that's a process that construction management firms and design teams like to go through before construction. And so that's the effort that we were taking on the second. Staff and MKN were working with the Regional Water Board for our low threat discharge for our dewatered groundwater. When some of our tanks that we have to put in for redundancy, there's an excavation that we're shallow to groundwater. It's likely to fill up with water, and we'll have to pump that. We're pursuing a process that would allow us to bypass treatment of that water because it could be a substantial amount of water for the plant to handle, and it would cause Michael and operations problems to treat it all. And so that's, we're getting permission to basically just discharge this water like any other construction project would. So that work's ongoing. Central Coast Blue, a little update on that. I talked a little bit last month. There's a couple more details on the joint council meeting. It is now scheduled for Tuesday, March 31st. The noteworthy thing is this will be a Brown Act meeting for this board, and so we will have to advertise in that. And so Amy is working with the City of Pismo on the noticing, and so it'll be properly noticed prior to that meeting. So you're free to attend. That will all be covered. And it's scheduled at the South County Regional Center, and I didn't have the time, but that may be out now. But there will be a formal notice following. A couple minor miscellaneous items on the 15th through the 17th. I'll be in San Francisco at the annual Water Reuse Conference. It's a conference that talks about projects such as Central Coast Blue largely, and So I've been to that a number of years ago when I was county, and it's a good conference, and so I'm looking forward to attending that. And then we had a pre-construction meeting for, I don't know, Michael, you might have covered that, for the rehab of the clarifier number two. It was scheduled to, it occurred yesterday. So we had the pre-construction meeting with Fluid Resource Management to begin construction of our clarifier number two rehab. No plant tours during the reporting period, and couple upcoming items. This will continue, and once we get something final from USDA, we'll have some revisions to Kennedy Jenks' contract to include some USDA language in the front of that. And we'll also be coming back with selection of district council, and that that RFP is out and closes. Do you remember the closing date on that, Amy? I'm sorry, I don't recall the closing date on that, but it's on the street right now. And so we're hoping to get a new general counsel on board. So with that, that concludes my administrator's report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
I do have a couple questions. Thank you for the updates from both gentlemen. On the redundancy project, we have nine plan holders. Thank you for the outreach for that. How many of them are local? Do you happen to recall?
I believe out of the, I don't know the addresses of everybody that's on there. I believe Specialty Construction is the most local firm that's holding a plan set right now.
Okay. Gotcha. Cause I did have a conversation, just for disclosure, and I've had a conversation with Mr. Gent, is that, some folks are thinking that the point system that was provided as part of the pre-qualifications is not exempting, but is providing others outside the area with more opportunities to bid. And it's like, well, the point system provides that you have to have experience in wastewater. Do the companies have experience in wastewater? And they didn't. So I just wanted to see if anyone had found a way to locally to kind of either partner with folks or come up with a way to become a general locally. But it sounds like, because of the desire for wastewater experience, which is appropriate, we may have some out-of-town bidders using the local hire provisions of the CWA. So just wanted to see if anybody had modified that. And then is there an update? I seem to recall that our 135 days from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service should be culminating around now.
So 135 is it's in mid-April when there is a minor update. We have been informed that the biologist has completed their work and they're routing. This is in regards to the biological opinion and the take coverage for the California red-legged frog. U.S. Fish and Wildlife has completed their biological opinion, which is the actual document that we need to receive to get take coverage. But it's being routed in a federal bureaucracy right now, which didn't mean to come out as a slight, but because I'm a bureaucracy as well. So we're optimistic that they won't take the full 135 days, and they had indicated, yes, we can take 135 days. This thing's simple. It won't take us 135 days. So right now we're day by day, we're moving the schedule in the date in the project schedule for redundancy. Every day we don't hear back. On the USDA, the rest of the stuff on USDA, as far as the financials, we got feedback from them that all the financial information looks good and is adequate. And that the engineering documents are adequate right now. So we're really at this point just left waiting on the environmental component to be able to wrap everything together and move forward with funding.
Great. Thank you for that update. I have one other question, and it was generated by the fact that you're heading to San Francisco in mid-March, and then it kind of went towards a larger question, and it has to do with the COVID-19 outbreak. And I'm wondering, are there any travel restrictions to San Francisco that you've heard? We've heard that there might be. I've heard that there might start to be some travel restrictions.
I have been tracking that because of just this conference. I have noticed a lot of Bay Area larger companies such as Facebook and Apple have canceled conferences because of the concern. Right now, the consensus is in-state to in-state travel is no restrictions as of right now. And so that's the guidance that I'm working on. It's $700 for the conference, and I could probably still get hotel back if something changes, but might end up having to, you know, spend the night of hotel money as well, if depending on the cancellation policies with the hotel that I have. But at this point, I'm still intending to go unless it's, you know, there's something more aggressive that happens at this point.
Okay. And I'm anticipating that our safety protocols are in place for staff at the plant to address cleanliness and working environment conditions as it is a wastewater treatment plant, correct?
Yeah. So safety is at the plant, that's probably the least opportunity that they would have to come in, because hand washing, gloves, masks, you know, everything's being done. So it'd be more community stuff that we would want to educate even staff on.
Perfect. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just a real quick. The Central Coast Blue meeting, joint council meeting, is that Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, and OCSD, is that who will be invited?
And AG.
And AG, too. Okay. Yeah. So it's everybody's.
I don't know if Jeff, do you know if Oceano is?
Oceano is.
My understanding, Linda, is that, how do I say this? There was an offer put out to OCSD, which was declined.
Okay.
So, but I don't know if your board ever got an opportunity to weigh into that request. I think that's where it stands currently.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
But it's an open public meeting.
Right.
So
yeah. I mean, I'll go as his board.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you say you'll go as this board, which is good, but I believe it's a joint council meeting, so there'll be, it's formalized with all three councils there to participate.
But isn't this board going to? The sanitation?
I'm not sure how that is going
to work. Let me get back to you, Linda. So the quorum is certainly from the two, having more than we have a majority.
But it is
there.
A public meeting, so I can
absolutely
attend.
You can absolutely attend.
That's
all
I needed to know. Yeah. Thank you.
And Mr. Gent's remembrance of agendizing this board or this body needs to do the same thing for the Five Cities Fire Authority, because there will be a quorum. Myself and Keith from AG will be there as well.
You should reach out to them.
I will.
Yeah,
I will definitely do that. So, but I guess from a question or maybe a possibility for Linda is if your board wanted to participate, I think there's still an opportunity to do that before it's noticed.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Any board member communication? Excuse me. Miscellaneous items.
No, and with your permission, I'll take that off the standing agenda, because I always have a section in my administrator's report that's miscellaneous items, and so I didn't know if those were miscellaneous items for the board, but if it's just for me, I can take that off the agenda.
Sounds good. Board member communications?
Nothing.
None this evening.
Okay, so that takes us to item 9, closed session. Perhaps we can have our legal counsel announce that.
Yes, thank you. Tonight there is one item for closed session discussion. Conference with legal counsel, existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D1. One case, Wolf versus Dutra et al., case number 18, CV0402.
And would anyone like to come up and speak on this item before we go to closed session?
If you could explain what it was a little more, I would appreciate that. I didn't get too much out of that, somebody versus somebody. If it'd be possible to say what it was about, give me a hint. Thank you.
I will turn to legal counsel to decide what it is we can disclose as what's going on in closed session. It's closed session for a reason. So,
yeah, so this case is a case involving an encroachment on a district easement. Particularly, it is a mobile home that has been located over a manhole. And the parties are the owner of the mobile home and the mobile home park itself and some other related parties. And because the district owns that easement, we are also named as a defendant in that case.
So I'll close public comment and we will adjourn to closed session.